Five, four, three, two, one.
It's the new Panic Room radio show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
So the 8th of February, and it is 9:30 Central Time, and obviously it's the Panic Room. I forgot, so it was 2024. I forgot, I'm sort of losing track of the years now, which is kind of scary, but what are you going to do? So, yep, here we are again, folks. Got a very, very special show for us, for you, and for me as well, because it's always a bit of a surprise. I never know what's going on. I tell you who does know what's going on is me old mate, Mocker X Steiner, and let's bring her on now.
Yeah. Thank you. hope I
Hello.
Am. Am I?
Please, this is all going on. But as we say, we say every week, and I never do, but this week I'm going to have to, is we will fix it in post. After when the show goes live on Thursday, no one will ever know what a fuck it this has been. Technically speaking, you and I are just as sparkling and wonderful and witty as ever. I got home from picking my daughter up from school, sat down, I was just halfway through an email, and then you started playing up, and then I got the notification from Comcast saying the internet's, you may notice the internet's down, you think. So we're still picking about with it for another couple of hours. I know. Well, we have just about all day Saturday without it. It's surprising how much you rely on it. So, we can watch a bit of TV. Oh, no, can't stream all our TV, can't watch telly, can't go on the internet. So, you know what I did? And this is going to make me sound like a real weirdo. I read a book.
Nice.
And again, late to the party, I've been meaning to read some Richard Layman for a long, 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 long time. Ever since Richard Chismar, bless him, actually compared me to Richard Layman and James Herbert's Love Child, which I kind of
like.
I picked myself up a copy of Richard Layman's Island and absolutely loved it. What a storyteller. Trying to pick my next one out now, but
nice.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Really, really good stuff. So and we're looking at for a good read. This I'd recommend, although I'm probably the only person in the horror community who's not read Richard Layman yet.
Right, yeah.
Although
yeah.
I thought that was rectified thanks to the internet outage at the weekend.
Yeah, I always find when we have an outage or something that it's just so relaxing. And, I think that the first however long you go through withdrawals, and then after that you're like, oh, it's so quiet and so nice. And,
I got stuff done. I got stuff, a couple of chores I need to catch around the house. I got those done. Read my book. It's amazing just how much of a time sucker, trying to explain to kids these days. I don't know, it makes me sound old. You're trying to explain to my kids, and they just look at me like, how did you function? Did you survive this? So I tell them about, our fortnightly trip to the library, and they just look like, what? What the fuck are you on? You sad old fart. It's funny, I had to go to the local library to get my passport processed. You have to go there and all the bits and pieces, which is kind of cool because it's convenient. And it was just wonderful stepping into a library. I miss libraries and I miss bookstore. I mean, I like being that, but I always love nothing better than the library or the books, just being surrounded by books.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And I'm slow, as you are, slowly filling my home with books.
Yeah.
I have many now.
I actually am in need of another bookshelf, but I don't even know where I would put it, which is sad.
Oh,
it's
you
really
find
sad.
Somewhere. You'll find.
Yeah,
you've got walls, haven't you? There you go.
Yeah.
Christian, get his tool out and I can't picture him with a tool belt actually. Get his tool belt out and get some more shelves up.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have to make sure I let him know that you suggested that.
Yeah, could you to stock up again, because I was at a book show thing in Galveston a couple of weeks ago, and got cleaned out. Some of the books from my collection, the books I got, I threw some of those in. And everything's gone, so I'm gonna have to restock for the next one.
Yeah.
It should be, I think, in June. So, but it's great. You know what's really fun is that people. Oh, I've heard of you.
That is cool.
I've heard of you. I've got one of you, and it's like, yeah, here we go. We're doing something right. You know?
I think so too.
Anywho, I could prattle all night, but nobody wants to listen to that. So, what have we got going on this evening?
Yes, I am super excited. We have two guests on, and we're just going to bring them both on and have a fun time. But we have two of the authors from the
well,
new
see, you put pressure on now. You put pressure on me. You put pressure on the guys. We're going to have a fun time. So, immediately you've added unnecessary pressure. We may not have a fun time.
That's why we're called the Panic Grandmas. I'm hoping that they will panic, and it just makes for a better show that way, I think.
Oh, can you remember that show years ago when we had that confused lady who phoned in?
Oh, no, she was
fun. Thought it was some sort
of
self-help, psychologist sort of thing. So, it's like... I wish I could have her phone in every week. That would be great.
yeah.
That could be a whole new segment of the show. But anyway, sorry. So
that's
what's going on?
The horror zine had an anthology published just recently, and so we have a couple of authors on from that. It's the horror zine's Book of Monstrous Stories, and we have two wonderful guests, Terry Grimwood and Tim Wagoner.
Hello, guys. Hello. Hopefully
Hello.
You just pressed the right button.
There they are.
Hey, how you doing? There we are.
Hello.
We got both of you?
I'm here. Terry's here.
Yeah.
Terry's here.
Yeah, I'm here too.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us on this internet-free evening. I don't know if you guys have experienced this recently, but it's just... I just awful. I just I can't function. All the things I want to do, I need to do that. Oh, can't do that. It's just how did we cope without the internet? I mean, can you guys remember pre-internet days? Just in the past.
I think so. Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I remember it just fine. Yep.
Yeah. It's like remembering the days before cell phones. I mean, I remember. I remember I got my first car phone. I started working in the community car, and it was literally fixed into the electrical, and it fitted into the car. I was like, but this was like, wow,
very normal, mate.
I can make calls in the car. Ooh,
it's funny. I'm watching. I mentioned this to you a while back, James. We were watching Downton Abbey, and of course, it's like super old
mm-hmm.
show. And there's just so much drama going on, and there's like, oh man, if only they could pick up their cell phone and make a quick phone call So that definitely plays into the drama.
I had the idea of doing that. He's writing a period piece, either like Downton Abbey or Jane Austen, or even a bit more new, like in the World War and that. And then it's all going on, and suddenly just puts out a cell phone. It just be brilliant. It just suddenly put cell phones. You have Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. You have Pride and Prejudice and cell phones. And you just see how the story would change with a cell phone thrown in. There you go.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, because that I think that does hamper a lot of the stories, horror stories, I think would be hampered a lot from, technology and cell phones. That's why I think there's when we travel and there's this one area that we go through right in the border of like Tennessee and North Carolina where the cell service just drops. And I'm like, there is a cool story out here because, you can't, right up there in the mountains.
To the guys, how obviously when you're writing, how do you deal with the cell phone problem?
I had a novel that I wrote. It took me about 20 years to write it. And when I first wrote it, there were no cell phones. So I had to change the ending when I finally wrote it because the ending wouldn't work because everyone would say, well, why didn't you just phone her up? So, it does make a difference. And you have to make a point of saying there's no signal in an area, don't you? You have to make a point of it instead of just... otherwise everyone's going to say, well, why don't they just phone for help or,
So, yes, you guys are both here tonight to talk to us about the the newly released The Horzine's Book of Monster Stories, which I have to say I absolutely love the cover. It looks really, really creepy, and I can't wait to get my copy now. So, let's see. Terry, why don't you go first and tell us a little bit about your story in the thing of boxing?
Oh, my story. Well, it's called See Me. And it's based on a recurring nightmare I used to have when I was a child. I would be in the car, in the back of the car, obviously, and we were driving through heathland near the coast. It was very vivid, and there would be something hiding under the bushes. I knew it was there as we were driving along the road. At any moment, I would see it. But I knew that I mustn't catch its eye. Because if I caught its eye, it would follow us home. And, of course, being a nightmare, I always caught its eye.
Oh.
And so that's what this story is based on, is that recurring nightmare. Yeah.
Nice. I have to admit.
Awesome. I like that.
Yeah, I think we've had a couple of authors on who their inspiration for the stories have been nightmares. And
Well, it's kind of
there's a couple of stories that really are based on that,
Yeah.
I mean, I call it sort of, you know, working while we sleep, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago. It was about five. I used to have that nightmare.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's nice that you've been able to finally bring it out.
Yeah.
I do think that's something as well, is that when we have the ability to write our deepest, you know, fears and the nightmares, and I think that does help to get it out there and, like you said, put it to bed. And have you noticed, I mean, that it doesn't seem to have the same creep factor as it used to?
Yes, it was very vivid when I wrote it. I was exactly as I remembered it. But I know you are right. I've been, you know, we all go through tough times in our lives, and writing has helped me through one particularly tough time. And I didn't realize until afterwards, there's a bunch of short stories that were eventually collected into a book. When somebody reviewed it, they found a theme running through the stories that I didn't know was there.
Nice.
And it was obviously connected with what was going on. So, yeah, and particularly horror stories are very, I think, cathartic.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Tim, why don't you tell us about your story in the anthology?
Well, my story is called The Man Who Could Talk to Monsters, and it takes place in a world that's, you know, it's recognizably our world, but slightly different. It's a world where people can just accidentally create tulpas, these thought forms. And it's about a character whose job is to come take care of them. Like he's like the pest removal person for tulpas. So it was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, sounds like it. And do you have the same experience that I think horror writers are able to write, you know, fears and bad things happening and kind of, and get it out there and not have it. It doesn't seem to have the same hold over us as I think that people who don't have the ability to write about it. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I'd say so. My wife is not a horror fan at all, but she loves to go to horror conventions with me because she says horror people are the nicest, sweetest, calmest people she's ever met. And it's like, well, sure, we get all kinds of things out and, you know, learn how to deal with this stuff on some level.
Yes, I have said that before. We've had all kinds of different genres authors come on the show, and I have definitely found that horror authors are they're so nice and so well-adjusted, and I think it is because, you know, in our writing, we can go kill the you know, annoying neighbor who, and, you know, within our writing, and I think that a lot of the other genres, they really can't, you know, get their emotions out like that. They should switch genres. Yeah. But I think we had a couple of excerpts tonight. Tim, did you want to set up yours or?
Sure. This is an excerpt from my novel Lord of the Feast, which is going to come out from Flame Tree Books in the middle of April. So this is an excerpt from the first chapter.
Okay.
Her vision swims with tears of terror, pain, and sorrow, and through them she sees Lee kneeling on the floor, head bowed, wrists and ankles bound with leather restraints, a ball gag in their mouth. Great Aunt Capri stands next to Lee, and she grips their curly black hair and yanks their head up, forcing them to watch the completion of the rite. I'm so sorry, love, Kate thinks. Lee doesn't look at her, stares blankly forward, and Kate wonders how much of their mind is left. An older man, bearded and disheveled, kneels next to a rusted shopping cart, hands clasped in front of him as if he is praying, on his face an expression of almost childlike wonder. Ethan stands in the center of the chamber, wild-eyed brown hair blowing in a sourceless wind. In his hands, he grips the Liber Prophet Sitinibus, the Book of Depravity, cover fashioned from fragments of fused bone, pages formed from desiccated, discolored flesh, letters written using the dark blood of the greatest sinners to ever walk the face of the earth. On the floor in front of Ethan, or more precisely, floating several inches above the floor, is a collection of unclothed body parts, arms, legs, torso, head. Each part comes from a separate individual, men, women, different races, different ages, and the parts look fresh, as if harvested within the hour. There's no blood at the junctures where cuts were made to separate the pieces from their original bodies. The top of the skull has been removed, exposing only emptiness within. A neck sprouts from the torso, and this is where the awful screaming comes from, which only makes sense, Kate thinks, as the neck and chest have vocal cords and lungs. The parts move with life of their own, writhing as Ethan reads from the book, shouting to be heard over the torso's shrieks, his mouth speaking alien words, each symbol causing micro-tears in reality. The ray things swirl around him like a miniature ethereal cyclone, making him difficult to see, and Kate can't read the expression on his face. Does he feel joyful, apprehensive, triumphant? Maybe all three, she decides. He is, after all, about to create a god. The longer Ethan reads aloud, the more damage reality takes. The air is brittle now, sharp, burning, and breathing feels like inhaling white-hot metal razors. Lee sobs as blood trickles from their nostrils and ears. Kate isn't bleeding, though, and neither is Caprice nor Ethan. The ray cyclone bends away from Ethan, arcs toward the collection of body parts, separating as it rushes toward them. The race vanishes at the end of the pieces of the god-to-be, and Kate knows that it's game over for her, for Lee, for everyone. Ethan, sweating exhausted, stops chanting. He lets the hand holding the book fall to his side, and he slumps, staggers, almost falls, but manages to stay on his feet. He stares at the body parts, waiting to see what will happen next. Caprice laughs in triumph. You can make sure Lee survives this, the voice in Kate's head says, and you know how. She does, and she's tempted. Sweet oblivion, how she's tempted. All she has to do is think one simple word. All she has to do is surrender. And she could save Lee, save the world, maybe even the whole damn universe. Her mouth starts to form the first letter of yes, but before she can say it or even fully think it, she sucks her lower lip between her teeth and bites down hard. Warm wet floods her mouth, and the pain, sharp, piercing, is so welcome she laughs with delight, spraying the air red. You think that's funny? The voice shouts in her head, furious. Try laughing at this, bitch. Agony tears through her skull, more intense than anything she's ever experienced or imagined. It feels like something with large, sharp claws is inside her head, furiously trying to dig its way out. The pain is so great it drives her to her knees. She grits her teeth, presses her hands to her head, and pushes inward as hard as she can, as if trying to squash the pain, make it smaller, contain it, but this only makes it hurt worse. Let me out. No. She falls forward and her forehead smacks the stone floor. She barely feels it. As she lies there, an endless series of explosions going off in her head, she hears Caprice laughing and laughing and laughing. Then Kate hears the Lord's first footsteps and she knows the rite is complete. The Lord is whole, or nearly so, and it's coming for her, for what's inside her. She would rise to her feet and run, but she's in too much agony to twitch a finger, let alone stand. The voice inside her head giggles like a mad child as the Lord draws closer.
Nice. When does it come out?
April 15th.
April 15th. And what was the title again?
Lord of the Feast.
Lord of the Feast. You know, as I was...
That was good. I enjoyed that.
As I was listening, you know, we got torso and limbs, and I'm thinking... you know, as horror writers, we do tend to, you know, write horrific things and we get it out and we are well adjusted and stuff. Do you read horrific things? Do you ever read in, you know, so much horror that you're like, oh man, that's a little too dark for me, or, and you got to take a step back and cleanse your palate with, like, you know, I don't know, a nice Western or something.
A romance, you know, nice romance.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I was going to say that, but...
Yeah, it's not that it feels too intense, but yeah, there does come a point where I start to feel like, you know, like just a little down, and I'm like,
yeah,
okay, you
yeah.
know, it's kind of wearing on me just a little, and I'll mm-hmm. try to go ahead and, you know, read something else. But in general, I get that much more from, like, if I'm watching a documentary about, you know, some mm-hmm. terrible crime or something, and,
yeah.
you know, it's about real people who experience real emotion, and there's no distance from that. So that's the sort of thing that can really... really
mm-hmm.
get me down if I watch it for too long.
Yeah, I know that, you know, who doesn't love Stephen King, right? And the last time I attempted to read Stephen King, and I love him, I do, he's such a great storyteller, and you know, we often joke about, you know, if he had a, we'd read his grocery list, but the book just got way too dark, way too soon for me, and I don't know, I maybe as I get a little older, I want a happily ever after. So when I'm reading something and I have, like, you know, bad things start to happen, I'm just like, especially if I connect with the characters and I like the characters, I'm like, oh God, please don't let anything bad happen to any of these people. And of course, when you're reading horror, a lot of times you're going to have bad things happen to your characters. So,
I need some romance now.
That's
kind of the point, though, isn't it? I mean, know. I know. It's funny, just picking up on what Tim said. I mean, I watch horror. I read horror. So I've just read Richard Layman's Island, which I thought was great. But if it's real, I watched the documentary on the Bernie Madoff thing about a month or so back. It was over Christmas. And that really upset me, just... because he told the stories of the people at the lower. There's one family, one couple. They put all their savings in, thought they were getting these great returns and all the rest of it. And then when it all blew up, not only had they lost all their savings, they also had to then pay back the money they'd been given. You know, the basically the interest. So they lost all that and all that. They lost their home, and it was just.
Wow.
They were in their retirement. That was the thing. It was like they suddenly retired. He had to, I think, ended up working at Walmart, and they had to get work because all their retirement was just ruined because of this guy.
Mm.
You know? And that because that's real. That resonated with me. That could happen to anyone. And yeah, so that yeah. Okay. So yeah, I am human after all.
Yeah, I know that. Oh, I think it was sometime last year we were watching the one of the docu shows or something, and it was about I think I talked to you about this, James, the Froggers. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Did you watch any of that? Yes, and that
I haven't seen that yet. No, that's kind of scary though.
Thinking of, yeah, there were so many things that, you know, you hear a weird noise in your house and you just, oh, it must be the house settling, or it's, you know, this or it's that. These people had people living in their house. And I have to say, my husband just, he was not good watching that show. I bet you he had some high blood pressure. He just was like, this is just awful. But, I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, anything that can get your heart racing that you're either watching or reading, I think that's pretty cool. So, but not everybody is the same, but it was definitely pretty freaky. But let's get back to the book, though. I think we had another excerpt. Terry, were you going to read an excerpt for us?
Yeah. Yay. This is actually from the story in the Book of Monsters, the story See Me, so it's the opening.
Awesome.
A monster. It was a monster. The monster. Oh, God, he knew it, remembered it. There on the side of the road, in the flesh, real, solid. Hallucination, deja vu, memory, who cared? It was there. He was driving home from the coast, his wife asleep beside him. The creature was on the off side of the narrow country lane. It was like a grotesque statue, 7, perhaps 8 feet tall, too tall to be a human being, too hairless and long-limbed. A lot to take in during those brief moments, especially in the fading light of a low, blood-red October sun. But Reese knew this thing already. He also knew the rules. It hadn't seen him yet, but it would. As the long, endless seconds passed and the final few yards between the car and the monster closed, Reese silently begged his wife not to wake up. She was turned towards the door, half curled about herself, as if protecting the life that grew within her. A formless collection of cells right now, but growing inexorably, a child, his child, their child. Please stay that way, Holly. Please stay asleep. Closer. Oh, God, closer. Dilemma. Should he stamp on the brake, shunt the car around and drive off the other way, or ram the accelerator down to the floor and get past the beast as fast as he could? 1 second to make the decision. Too late. Now he pleaded with the car. Don't break down. Please don't break down. Beside it, a moment, an instant of time, and there in all its horrible glory, over large head, large featureless white eyes, its mouth a thin gash, no ears, no nose, no hair, claws ended in finger-like spider leg fingers, armed with scythe-like talons. The rules. Obey the rules. Ignore it. Don't make eye contact. Pretend it wasn't there. It seemed to start from its trance and turned its attention towards the car. Don't look back. Don't look. It was impossible, as it always had been. Reese looked, caught in a moment of terrible fascination. Their gazes met, and the deal was done.
You know, it that was great, and it just reminded me. I'm kind of, as much as I love horror, I'm kind of a wuss. I'm kind of a scaredy cat. I really am. And you know, if something scares me in the middle of the night or something, I will definitely do the thing. Well, you know, don't look at it. Don't acknowledge it. If you don't acknowledge it, it can't get in your head, so it doesn't know seen it. So.
Yes.
It's like when you're a little kid. I mean, you know, every little kid knows that the surefire protection against axe murderers and monsters and everything is a blanket. You know, you put your head in the blanket,
yeah,
I'm good.
Over your head.
I'm cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Can't see me. I'm good. You know. And I remember as a kid, I perfected the art of sort of being able to sleep with just a little mouth poking, a little nose poking at the cool air, you know, just because I'd managed to. And I guess that's the problem, you know, with what, you know, we have a creative brain, especially one that leans towards horror, is certainly as kids, we can terrify ourselves. I mean, it's just,
I think that's where it starts. It probably starts when you're a child, you know, if you've got a vivid imagination. When you're a child, it's you're more frightened of things, I think.
Yeah.
That's what happens,
and
then you grow up and you sort of understand them a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The more you're right, the more you understand, the more you know, but there's still those little dark things it could be, you know, but I can still frighten myself now, funny.
Yeah.
But it's all part of the job, so that's okay.
Yeah, there's been definitely times on the show when, you know, we record really late at night, you know, do the show late, and then, you know, the guests will come on and read a snippet of their book or something, and I'm like, oh, gosh, why? Now I'm not going to have sleep tonight. But, so, I mean, as far as, you know, the horror genre, we have so many different, you know, subgenres here. And would you say monsters rate pretty high in your list? We'll start with Terry.
Yeah, I think so. I'm very widely read. I read all sorts. You know, I don't just read horror. So, I can't say. I like subtlety, really. I don't like things to be too obvious. So if it's a monster, I like it to be a long, long time before it's actually revealed.
Oh, nice, nice.
You know, so and I also I think you were talking about books that disturb you, and I was just thinking I remember Pet Sematary when I read really disturbing, that book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yes, I think monsters. I don't know, whatever really. I like Clive Barker, because he creates some amazing monsters, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're fun to create as well.
And what
and
would
as
you
well,
think,
you can just let your imagination run riot with you. You know, it can. It doesn't always have to follow the laws of physics. I mean, you just have at it. And I like you said, Clive Barker, he picked a great example there. He just creates amazing things.
Yes,
to spend an hour inside Clive Barker's head would be I'd do that absolutely.
I mean the myths and legends, you know, there's a lot of very interesting creatures and monsters in there, aren't there, you know.
I did
write a book on a novella on based on the Babylonian myths, which Hellbound actually published. And that was fun because there were some sort of ready-made monsters there to pick and choose from.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can try and think up these things, and somewhere in the past, somebody's thought of something similar. You know, like I say that there's been ever since man, sort of developed. The art of thinking, the every generation's had its monsters, human monsters, because I always say some of the worst monsters people
definitely.
Just when you as a horror writer or horror reader, you think I've written or read the worst thing ever, and then suddenly you find somebody somewhere has done a lot worse to somebody else in real life, which is dark, but that is reality, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, what would you say, Tim? Monsters, or do you like hauntings, or what is your favorite subgenre of the horror?
Yeah, when I was a kid, it was monsters. I'd always be disappointed when, on the Saturday horror show, the ghost story would come on, or it's about witches, and I'm like, I don't care about these guys. Where's my monster? I used to call all horror books monster books when I was really little. And I think, in a lot of ways, everything in a horror story, I mean, whatever the dark thing is, whatever the antagonist is a monster, whether it's human or whatever, because the humans are never just regular, idiots that are going to rob a house and they just kill somebody accidentally. They're always larger than life, or they're like Hannibal Lecter, that they have these powers that humans don't have, where his pulse rate doesn't go up when he kills somebody. I'm like, you're moving your body. Your pulse rate's going up at least some.
Yeah.
But, I think it works really well because it's like, these things are like a violation of reality. They can't be, but they are.
Yeah.
And I agree with it's better if you don't see them all. I mean, in some ways. I mean, kaiju, that's different. But, if it's a horror story type monster, I think CGI is like one of the worst things that ever happened. Because once you see it, you can deal with it. You can measure it. You want it to be something that, you can't quite do that. You want a flash of teeth and you want a flash of eyes. You don't want the thing to just sort of stand there still while you like kind of look it all over.
Well, I'm going to look at the benchmark. The two benchmarks that jump into my head is obviously Jaws and Alien, where, certainly with Alien, you didn't see the whole thing till pretty close to the end of the movie, which is great. Yeah. You just saw, like you say, just those little bits. Though.
And that made the
thing all the more. It's funny, when you saw it full up, it was like, you say, that took some of the fear away, but just seeing those little bits, and that was and obviously Jaws, you didn't see the whole shot because of technical issues, which, we know how Steve Spielberg felt with the technical issues. The thing barely worked, but so they had to, but it made the film so much better than, like you say, now the CGI is the shark, and no matter how good it is, it's a computer-generated shark, but Jaws. Even now, I watched it again recently. I forced my daughter to watch it, and it still stands up after all this time. Unbelievable! I can't imagine them making anything that good really now, because they do rely too much on. There's stalwart directors who that go to great lengths to say, we are not using CJ. We're going to use practical effects, and I take my hat off to them.
I've noticed in a lot of the movies lately, the horror movies, they rely an awful lot on jump scares. And jump scares get a really bad name, but you know what? Any way that you can get me to jump, I'm okay with it. I really am.
Well, isn't that, you know, that's part of it. I mean, not all jump, but, you know, you don't want just a movie just full of jump scares. But that's why you want to go, you know, and it's not often... I think as horror writers, we probably take a lot of scaring, to be honest. I watched The Conjuring with a friend of mine, and she was absolutely... She was just like hiding behind the cushion and all the rest. It was like, this is like the mild... My daughter watched this when she was 7 or 8 and didn't flinch. Grown woman, he's just like, oh, I know, you're telling me to stop. Seriously? You should watch some of the stuff we watch, you know?
Now, I will say that there was a book written by the oldest daughter of the family who lived in the Conjuring house, what it's loosely based on. And the book was way creepier, I think, than the movie, but that's often the case. But it's definitely I felt like she wasn't really a natural-born, you know, storyteller or a writer, and I think that made it even creepier that she was telling the story. So if anyone gets a chance to read that, I would recommend it. So, but yeah, we're getting back. Yeah. Oh, it's called House of Darkness, House of Light, and it's by, I think her name is Andrea Perrone, whatever their last name. The family that was in the Conjuring movies.
Okay.
It was pretty eerie. I was really, really pretty. Yes.
I would think the original film of The Haunting of Hill House, the black and white film, I think that's the ultimate, you know, the hidden monster. You don't ever see the ghost or the monster. Mm. And I think that was a brilliant film.
So we're getting close to the end of our show. So, Tim, let us know what are you writing now? What are you working on now? What are you working on?
Well, right now I'm working on another book on writing. I did a couple on horror writing, and this one's on tie-in writing media tie-in fiction.
Hmm.
So I'm working on that. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So is it a how-to book or?
Yes, it's a how-to. I also talk about my own experiences writing tie-in fiction. So there's a little bit of memoir in there, but I talk about like lessons I learned about the craft of the business when I do that too.
That's really cool.
Oh, that's one book I'm going to have to. I'm not going to do an X-Dean and try and wangle a free copy. I science fiction is always. I've written, I think, one science fiction story. It wasn't, you know, science fiction. I mean, I grew up reading, you know, the greats, Arthur C. Clarke, Ursula Le Guin, Bradbury, all, you know, what I call hardcore science fiction. And I loved it, but I have no idea. I mean, how you build entire world, entire universe. I found that so daunting. I never even really tried it. I mean, how do you? I mean, do you deal with that in the book, Tim?
Well, since it's about media tie-ins, you know, you're writing about a property that already exists, so you know you don't have to build the whole world. But a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of blanks that that just are not there, and so there are times when you have to sort of fill in the blanks. And that's really interesting when you have to try to imagine, like in Star Trek, they keep talking about how people don't, you know, humans don't use money. The Federation doesn't use money. And you're like, okay, how does that really work when you're on vacation somewhere? It works fine aboard a starship because it provides all your needs. But if you happen to be writing a scene like that, then you really have to kind of try to sort of figure out, either gloss over it or I prefer to try to figure it out because it shows something interesting about, you know, the world that we ordinarily wouldn't see in a TV show or a movie.
So how would they do it? That's now going to bug me. It's going to be in my head all night. Thanks for that. It always struck me, you know, that they made a big thing about it. They built this, I guess, utopian society in the future that they don't use much. So how – there must be something, you know. I mean, cash money, fine, but we're pretty much phasing that out now. But there's got to be some way. I mean, society has been based on the exchange of something for something since, you know, since the cavemen were throwing bows at each other. You know, so there has to be something, because otherwise, like you say, how would it work? I mean, just yeah, I can't remember who wrote it. I wrote many years ago, back in middle school. I wrote a book I got from the library, and it was a guy who slipped into a, I think it was an alternate universe, I think it was, and it worked was if the government gave you money, and when you went to work, you have to pay. So you went to the supermarket, you had to pay them, and so everything was like turned around. I remember that, it stuck with me all these years, was like, how the hell does that work? Because the guy was getting into trouble because he wasn't going to work, so he was just stockpiling all this money, and he wasn't working. So I guess it's the same thing, but on its head. That sort of thing always fascinated me. And I would like to learn how to write science fiction, so I may well... When is that book slated for, Tim?
I don't know yet. I'm supposed to be due in April, and I'm going to finish it early, but I don't know when they'll bring it out. If I had to guess, I'd say probably next fall.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Right, okay.
We will definitely keep our eyes open, and I'll definitely be contacting you to come back on the show so James can beg you for a free copy and pick your brain a little bit more.
I would never do that.
No, that's me. That's me. I do that. So, Terry, what about you? What are you working on now?
Some short stories. I have a little spell of writing short stories, various sorts. I've been working on a science fiction series, actually, on that subject. So I'll be writing the next novella in that series.
Nice.
Well,
sometime.
So everybody's writing science fiction except me, so I'm now feeling left out. Thanks.
They're short stories at the moment. Yeah. I like to have a spell
of
short stories.
Hopefully we'll see some of them popping up in Hellbound's anthology.
Well, one of them is being written with that in mind, so...
Nice.
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant.
So, we are getting toward the end of our show. So real fast, can Tim, let us know where we can find you online?
Well, the easiest thing is just to go to my website, which is timwagoner.com. And it has, contact tabs for email, for, social media, for anything, for YouTube channel, for newsletters. So it's the best place to go.
Awesome. Great. And Terry?
Facebook, really. Terry Grimwood on Facebook.
Well, that's simple.
That's about the best.
All right.
Yeah, that's the best place to get to find me. Yeah.
All right. And I want to thank you both so much for coming on the show. And I will definitely be contacting you again to come. Well, first of all, you have to promise to come back and see us.
Of course.
Yes.
Yay.
Love to. Yeah.
All right, and for all of our listeners out there, go out and pick up a copy of the Horror Zines Book of Monster Stories, with stories by Terry Grimwood and Tim Wagoner and a whole slew of other people. So, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I definitely can't wait to have you back.
Cool.
Thank
Thanks
you.
So much for having me.
Okay, guys.
It's been a
thanks
pleasure.
A lot.
Thank
have a great rest of your day, your evening.
Okay, thanks.
Okay,
nice.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And it is, and time has beaten us, so unfortunately it's that time of the night where we say goodnight, Xtina.
Ah, goodnight, Xtina.
Good night. And then the music will play, so
yay.
I can do that in post. So so you need to hit end show now.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say to the guys listening, and we definitely had a trying time this evening as well as last. And James is going to put it all together and make it all sound pretty and have the intro music and stuff like that. So, yeah, thank you so much, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having us. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Good night.
Bye. Down. It's only begun, yeah. One look.
that sweet surrender.
Sweet surrender.